Americans are depressed, divided, and dying. Is this a symptom of the death of the American dream? Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Wherever you get podcasts, find us each week at US of Ed, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. Ed, if the American dream is dead, who or what killed it?
Well, the American dream actually was a very short dream, if you stop to think about it. Remember, America emerged from a deep depression. There was no dream talked about before the depression. The only dream was to have a piece of land. People were just moving into cities. Cities were not pleasant places. So the cities were the American nightmare up until the end of the Second World War. And the reason for that was the nation was going through a transition. The American dream arose post-war because the United States had a lot of land, a lot of money, and a lot of technology. And all three were used to produce something that was quite fascinating. It's called the suburb. And the suburbs were on very cheap land because as the farms disappeared, the farmers sold the land at relatively low prices, and housing technologies had changed enormously. So you could build a house, and I remember the days when I was in high school where people were building a whole house in a matter of a week, an entire house in a week. And that house was composed of pre-built packaged products. They were called stick-built, but most of the stuff was actually built on the ground and then erected. And once you built that house, the government was providing a road, and that road led to the city, and the city had factories. So the American dream was made of three components. One, the suburb. Two, the road. And three, the factory. And all three are disappearing now. The roads are very difficult to drive on. Seen recently those roads flooded, tornadoes and things striking them, and them being washed away. And in New Orleans, I saw them washed away entirely. Look around American cities. Go by train between Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia, and mile after mile of dead factory space. That's gone. And the suburbs that used to be anchored by these great malls and great places like JCPenney's and so forth, they're shut, wiped out. So as the economy fell apart, the dream fell apart, and that's in economic terms. There's a spiritual terms too, I'm sure you want to talk about.
Well, let's look at most Americans' experience, let's say, of the American dream. For most Americans, it was that the man with a high school education could find himself a job, one of those factory jobs that would support a wife who stayed home, 2.4 kids, white picket fence. And maybe for immigrants, it was the story of the land of opportunity, streets paved with gold for those willing to work hard enough for it. Would that be fair to say?
That would be very fair to say. Remember, this dream was relatively cheap. And people forget that. These housing prices that we're experiencing now are very new. You could buy a house, a very gigantic house, in the 60s in the United States for $100,000, and you need five families to move in with you. That's how cheap it was. The other thing was the job was steady. If you went to work for whatever company, JCPenney or wherever, you were signing up for life. You were part of that firm forever. So that caused stability. Some moms stayed at home. More than 50% stayed at home. But many could pick up a little extra work at the school or something else. So the dream was real. There's a white picket fence. The whole works. What facilitated all this is something the United States did, and Canada and few other nations did, was provided federal home loan mortgages. You could borrow money from a bank guaranteed by the federal government, which meant that you could get a very low interest rate for 30 years. So you knew what your payment was going to be for 30 years at a low interest rate. And if you were a veteran, as I was, it was even lower. And so this covered a huge swath of the American population who got these great loans at low interest rates. But there was one little problem. Blacks didn't have equal access to the same suburbs or the same loans. But even so, blacks had loans, and they were all black and black and Hispanic suburbs, too. I grew up in one, in San Bernardino, California. So everyone was part of this dream. And then lastly, grandma and grandpa didn't have to live with you anymore. There was Social Security, another government benefit. So the United States was socializing very rapidly, and there was county health care. Most counties in the United States, that's a division of government between the state and the local government, operated hospitals and health care facilities. This isn't because the United States wanted to do something kind to people. It was simply that after the war, we had tuberculosis, polio, and these diseases that were hitting the nation. And public health was the best way to remedy them. But public health was also a very good thing for American citizens. So in a sense, the American government was the first to see the value of socialism and putting it in place with the basics. That all fell apart three times. The first time it fell apart was with the first industrial declines in the 60s. They started in the 50s, but you really started them gathering steam in the 60s, and Detroit went up in smoke. The blacks there were rioting, but the whites were angry too, and in the 70s. Then you started the steel factories closing in the 70s and 80s. And so you had this conflagration of people destroying their cities and destroying their income and their lives. And then the second revolution, which started in the 80s, was the pension plans disappearing. Many people had fixed benefits from their supposed pensions. But when the factories started falling apart, the factories actually used their pension money to bail the company out. So people's pensions left, and the only thing they had left was Social Security. And thank God that's still around. But over half of Americans today who are over 65 are below the poverty line and barely have enough to eat. And if it weren't for Meals on Wheels and charity, they wouldn't be even getting enough to eat at all. So this American dream came fast and it went fast, and it is now over. Many people think the average American must be on $100,000 to $150,000 a year. The average American's only on about $50,000 to $55,000 a year, and it is not enough anymore.
Looking at the job situation now, we saw those jobs disappearing in the industrial sectors. In the 1950s, colleges probably little more than breeding grounds for socialists and limp-wristed academics. Nowadays, though, a college degree is practically mandatory for any of those well-paying jobs, those jobs that you mentioned right there, Ed, and only a tiny, tiny sliver of the overall new jobs being created do not require a college degree. That may not necessarily be a bad thing, but the American college system, designed as a profit-making system, is that the failure here? Because the college education has become both mandatory and almost impossibly expensive.
Yes, and I think there's a combination here. When I went to university, the universities didn't attempt to provide job training. They taught you literature and history and art and music and that sort of thing. So when you went to the job, you met a person who was like you. They had literature and music and art in their background. And the real work was done by the workforce. But now, all of a sudden, the worker has a technical degree, and that technical degree allows them to do the kind of thing. So the brain and the hand have come together. You have to have a college degree now because your brain and hand have to work together. To run this station, you have to use your hands and know how to manipulate these things. You don't need a college degree for that. But you have to go on air, and you have to know things. Content is king. So that combination, and in marketing and all these fields, content is king. Knowledge content. So the United States went through one of these things before, a total revolution in industrial base after the Civil War. There were riots in the streets, and the unions came out of that and the like. We're going through another revolution, and that revolution is splitting people on the basis of their backgrounds. And those backgrounds don't necessarily mean you're rich. You don't get rich anymore by having a college education. You may be able to make it and only have two jobs. Many Americans have two or three jobs, and they have college educations. But the college education, because the human resource base isn't needed to produce the product, and it can be produced by someone elsewhere. For example, many people around the world are shopping globally for their staff assistants. So if you want somebody to type something, it's not somebody next door to you or in front of you. They may be two or three continents away. And they may be in Africa. They have college educations too, or India, or the Philippines. So the college education's the answer to getting to the door, but it won't even open the door anymore.
There's a quite a lot from Canadian author Ronald Wright. Socialism never took root in America because the poor see themselves not as an exploited proletariat, but as temporarily embarrassed millionaires. Now, you mentioned some of the rise of socialism in the United States, but while Europe had their leftist revolutions in the decades we're spanning, and even Australia insists on a fair go for all, has the American dream convinced Americans that failures inequality are their own rather than failures of their government?
Just recently, yes. And I think Trump is kind of like the end of an era where the person is central to making this movie, this drama. And Donald Trump always portrays himself as a person who is rich and has made himself rich. He hasn't benefited from the crowd, or so he says. Truth is, he has. But he says he hasn't. All the movies in America, John Wayne, all these people, Horatio Ellis, they made it on their own. Well, that's no longer the case. It's certainly not the case in technology. It's not the case in medicine. It's not the case in all these rising fields. So when you get collective industrial or economic output, people start thinking about collectivizing other social goods like healthcare, housing, and the like. So the United States is going through what I call a soft socialism. People are gradually moving to a set of basic rights that are guaranteed by their collective activity. Here in Australia, collective activity means the government, but it doesn't mean that in the United States. For example, there are cooperative insurance companies in the health space rising now, where workers are taking over and buying health care in bulk collectively. Doctors are forming collective health services organizations. We have many, many workers putting themselves in collectives to buy what we call here superannuation. They're setting up their own collective systems. So the American tradition is being collectivized, but not socialized.
Uniquely in the developed world, we've seen life expectancy actually dropping in the United States. And we know why that is. We've discussed it before. White Americans are going backwards, particularly, I believe, white American males because of opioid abuse.
That's true. But opioid abuse is, how we say, the thing that kills them. What started is despair. And when you don't see that white picket fence, the thing that your father told you about, and your father is now an older person that needs care him or herself, and they had the picket fence, and you had it as a child, and you can't replicate it, you go into a deep despair because the model you have in your head is not there. And that's what's killing the white American. The other thing that's killing the white American male is all of a sudden this lady turns up with a turban on and she's your boss. And she has not just a college education, but a master's degree or a doctor's degree and is quite eloquent. And you can't say she's inferior. Certainly she isn't. So this hurts. With black males, it's a little bit different. Black males were caught in a different kind of hype. Sports, movies, and things like this. The quick way. Well, the quick way has turned out not to be the best way. Most American football and basketball players are bankrupt in the first 5 years. Many black Americans are financially insecure, even though they're making the same money that white Americans are, because their financial habits are so poor. They buy cars that they don't really need. They spend money they really shouldn't. So we have kind of the quick fix for the black that kills you and the slow boil for the whites that kill you. So the American dream has to be replaced by a new dream. And let's hope that this dream is going to come soon. For black Americans, it was Martin Luther King. Prior to that, for white Americans, it was John F. Kennedy. They're dead. Where's the dream?
Just want to wonder on that point. The 1950s, if we say the 1950s was the golden era of the American dream, if we were to make America great again by returning to that decade, like you point out, I don't need to tell you, you lived it, you marched against it. The 50s wasn't the American dream for everyone, for blacks, for Hispanics, for gays, for women. Is the death of the American dream just white men finding out what it's like to be treated like everyone else?
Well, that's the death of the American dream for them. The death of the American dream for blacks and Hispanics and so forth has a component of that. But there's a larger component for the others, and that is hope. Hope for yourself, hope for your family, and the like. For whites, it's supremacy. I'm bigger, I'm better, I'm smarter. So they're the same dream, but one's on the left-hand side and the other's on the right-hand side of the brain.
Mm. And just on that as well, of course, you mentioned the spiritual aspect of this loss of hope in Americans right now. What do they have to look for?
Well, I think America has to be renewed. I like this idea of a new agenda for infrastructure. And that infrastructure will not be just physical infrastructure. It'll be rebuilding the entire system. I think we have to rethink the university system in the United States. It started out as an agricultural system and mechanical system. Now we have to start thinking of it as a social building system and building people in a slightly different way. The same thing's true as the elementary schools and the like. I think the reason things are so expensive now, things are out of kilter now, is we're chasing the wrong dreams. And that old American dream is the wrong dream to chase. We have to start chasing a dream where people are more frugal. That's part of climate change, but it's also part of a new real world. We cannot burn up, destroy, remake things anymore, overpackage it. We have to come up with a new dream. We would call it frugal, but I think the next generation is going to call it hopeful.
US of Ed is produced in the studios of 2SER in Sydney. Help support the work we do by going to 2SER.com/support. Ed and I'll be back next week to talk the last newest news in politics. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and find us on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed.